I don't know about you, but I'm predicting a lot of exciting, amazing things that happen to the groups. Like big, not just big, but big time stuff.
Telling you, bro, it's been happening, bro.
Not too much.
Still hitting more Peggy O's.
Everybody, welcome back to Riff Raff. Shane Terrio here. Thanks for tuning in. How is everybody? I'm doing great. Thanks so much for asking. Yeah, it's been a while, but everything's been good. Hope everybody's staying healthy during these crazy, crazy times. Couple of announcements. A little shameless self-promotion, but it is my podcast, so I'm launching a new website, completely revamped. I'm really excited about this, ShaneTerrio.com. Yeah, really original, I know, but hey, it's easy to find, and you'll love it. I mean, I've got a lot of new instructional things up there, a lot of music. I've been spending a lot of time posting new things, and I will continue to do so. I encourage you to go check it out, sign up. Mailing list. There's going to be a lot of exclusive content, a lot of new music I've been writing that's not available anywhere else. Also, I've been a lot of people have hit me up about doing lessons. I'm going to do one called Mojo Mondays, and it's going to be a live masterclass workshop. You know, I'll talk about all things guitar, and there's going to be a lot of things up there that I'm not putting on YouTube or anything else. So check it out. I want to give a shout out to Elizabeth Dunn and Rex Singleton. Thank you so much for the donations for Riff Raff. I appreciate your help and support. It means the world to me. And anyway, thanks all you guys for listening. Happy holidays. Check me out Instagram, Facebook, and take care. Here's today's guest. My guest today is Mr. Guthrie Trapp. Guthrie's a phenomenal guitar player, impeccable tone, taste, technique. And as you hear now, it's a tune called Pick Piece from his record of the same name, Pick Piece. Urge you to check that out. I'm sure you've probably heard of Guthrie if you're checking out this podcast, but if not, you're about to become a fan by the end of it, maybe halfway through. Yeah, Guthrie's probably known for playing with Jerry Douglas early on. That was probably the first gig where he got to showcase his abilities. You know, he's one of the best guitar players, not just in Nashville, but basically anywhere. And great guy, always great to see him. This episode is really fun. I mean, it really kind of went instructional for a while. So you'll probably get a lot out of it. A lot of licks. How many licks does it take to get to the end of this podcast? Well, the world may never know, but you may steal a few before the end of it. Guthrie's also a very successful teacher. You can check him out on artistworks.com. We talk about that as well. And it was great to have him on. Hope you enjoy it. Let's try it again. Thank you. eyes. At the Twilight Zone corner.
Well, yeah, I'm always in the Twilight Zone. Yeah. Spy cord.
I love that. Tonight on the Twilight Zone.
Oh.
Yeah, Guthrie.
Oh, man.
Killing. I'm here with my bro, Guthrie Trapp.
I'm here taking a guitar lesson.
Shit, yeah, right. Shit.
Oh, my
God. I'm going to have to get the lady that cleans our house to come up and sweep the floor after all those notes on the floor.
Right.
All our notes we... I'm suffering from deadly note buildup.
Well, that's
early. Been gigging.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm getting scraping it off like plaque.
Right. I totally understand that. It's nice to sit and play guitar with somebody, man. It's been a while. Man.
Are you comfortable? Because I don't want you to have to lean. You want me to get you another chair? You
no, good? No, no. I'm good. I'm going to scoot up a little bit.
Yes.
I'm good.
So Guthrie's just hanging in New Orleans for a week, and we, a couple mutual friends in our, we went to dinner last night, and yeah, man, why not take advantage of you being in town to be a guest? Thanks for coming by.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me.
Guthrie sounds fine through that Vibralux, and well, you would have sounded fine through my pig
super
nose.
Super nice, man.
That's a
lush.
Yeah, I love
warm.
That.
Warm. Yeah, that's a great sounding guitar too, man. I can't believe I'm playing a guitar that belonged to John Scofield,
yeah.
And now it's yours. He gave it to you.
Yeah, it was a birthday gift.
Really cool.
I know. It's an artist, an Ibanez artist, his artist model, which. I use it all the time now, man. I take that and a Strat or a Tele to a session, done.
It's beautiful guitar.
That thing sounds killer for rhythm. It stays in tune. I just use it on this girl's record this week, so the strings are a little funky on it, but you sound
it
great.
It feels good, yeah.
Yeah, it tunes up like a piano, man. It's a great guitar.
It all really right. does sound great. Yeah, man, I got called to do this clinic in South Africa, and so I arranged for my mom and dad to be able to go. I'm an only child, so I arranged for my mom and dad to be able to go with me, and we went over there for like three weeks right at the beginning of March, and so that was right when all this stuff started happening, and then so we got back safely and everything, which was a little bit of a stressful ordeal, but not too bad. We ended up lucking out, but when we got back to Nashville, of course, I did the 14-day quarantine and then started, you know, just seeing how everything was going. And obviously no live music or anything like that. And so after, you know, kind of hanging out for 4 or 5 months, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we said, well, look, let's meet in the mountains over in the Smokies. We'll do a week just to get out of town. I just needed a change of pace.
Yeah.
And so a change of scenery. So we went over there and then went to Asheville with our buddy Peyton, who you met last night. And then... and then we drove down to New Orleans, and I'm just here kind of indefinitely, you know,
yeah.
hanging and, you know, doing this with you, which is awesome. And then
yeah,
just seeing what happens, you know, I mean, after being in Nashville for almost 20 years, it's kind of time for a little change of scenery, a little, you know.
It's good to mix it up.
Yeah.
Bit,
yeah. A little know, inspiration.
Things from being a little, what's the word I'm thinking of? Incestuous.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's good to mix things up musically. I'm about to do the same thing myself, actually. So. Yeah, we have a mutual friend, Doug Below, but I think we maybe met before then. I don't remember, but
yeah,
have many mutual friends and one mutual boss,
right.
John Oates.
That's right. Yeah. What a crazy.
We were talking about him last night. He's a really great guy and
one of my favorites of all time, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I consider, you know, myself super lucky to be able to work with these people, and I've always just gone where the good music, the work, and the good people are. I never really had a plan on like, you know, a goal or a plan. I just knew to keep going where the good music is. If you're unhappy in a situation, get out and change it until you're, you know, in the right groove. Right. And then met Oates and Telluride with Jerry Douglas about 15 years ago and just kind of hit it off. I didn't really even know at that point who Hall & Oates were.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't grow up listening to that music or my parents listened to a lot of bluegrass and folk music and some jazz, but nothing like I know about those players now. Like I didn't grow up on Wes Montgomery or anything like that. I didn't know who those names were until people started getting me hip to those. And, but you know, so I wasn't really aware of any 80s pop music or hard rock or anything like that, you know,
right.
And probably why I gravitate more to always, you know, usually playing, especially in a situation like this with a clean tone.
Yeah.
And if I get on a gig, I use more overdrive and stuff, of course, but you know, just I've always just kind of naturally gravitated towards a like, you know, front pickup, warmer tone. And a lot of people know me for playing Telecaster, country music, but it's really just guys like you and me and you know, people that are kind of influenced by a lot of different kinds of music. We just play to the song. You know, if it's a country song, we play country. If it's a blues tune, we play blues. If it's something like we just did, we go to the feeling of the music.
Use your musical instinct.
Yeah, yeah, but to not, you know, to keep from rambling on, but meeting Oates and, you know, it's interesting because how that worked out, yeah. You know?
Yeah, and I've played with him a few times too on I guess he would call John's stuff more sort of Americana country roots.
Yeah. Totally, yeah.
Uh-huh. It's funny, man. Our mutual friend Doug Below is a great drummer.
Yeah.
It's kind of a funny story, I should probably say, but, you know, Guthrie, when I first met Guthrie, he was playing with Jerry Douglas. Jerry Douglas is a world-renowned dobro player. He's a great guy, and Doug Below was his drummer. It still is his drummer. But one of these funny stories, like you're saying you didn't know anything about Hall & Oates, Doug went to Nashville to audition for Jerry Douglas.
That's right? Yeah.
And I remember when he told me, he's like, I'm going up to Nashville to audition. I said, dude, that would be great if you got that gig, because in Nashville, it'd be sort of like the equivalent of the you know, having the clout of playing with like Zappa or something in the bluegrass, where you'd automatically be in with a lot of people.
Instant street cred.
Right. Yeah. So Doug goes up to audition. And he nails the audition. He said it was at Jerry's house.
Mm-hmm.
And
I was there, yeah.
Oh, you were there?
Yeah, yeah.
And then after Doug says, man, you know, you look a lot younger than I would have thought, you know, in those movies and stuff. And Jerry's like, well, movies? What? Like, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, I mean, I saw you in Smoking the Bandit and stuff when I was a kid. He thought he was Jerry Reed. He didn't even know who Jerry Douglas was. Unbelievable. And Jerry just laughed at it, I guess, right?
It was so funny because Jerry's got an unbelievable sense of humor. And so, I mean, he was just like doubled over laughing, you know, and just thought it was awesome. And of course, those guys, they love that kind of shit,
yeah,
you know?
They love it.
And so, but Doug was in immediately. You know what's funny is Doug was playing a bunch with Jack Pearson up there.
Right.
And so that's the first time I heard him play. And I thought, well, God, this is incredible, you know? And so the guy that was going to play with us when I first joined Jerry's band, we haven't even done a gig yet. We were still rehearsing and stuff. And this guy bailed at the last minute. He had something come up. Like, I don't know if it was a family emergency or something, but he had to cancel the whole first leg of this tour. And so Jerry was trying to figure out who to get. And me and Todd Parks, the bass player, both kind of at the same time said, and I kind of stepped out, you know, a little out of my comfort zone because I had just met Jerry not that long ago. But I knew my intuition was so strong at that point. I said, Jerry, I said, before you hire anybody else, please listen to this guy. Please check this guy out. And he did, you know, and it ended up working out perfect. Yeah, I just, know you know, because normally I wouldn't have, who am I to recommend somebody to somebody like Jerry, you know? But we just knew that it was going to be awesome.
But that's great, man. Yeah, going back to Oates.
Funny story.
Guthrie was, we're in New Orleans right now. Guthrie was here a year or two ago playing out somewhere out in New Orleans with John Oates. And John calls me or texts me. He's like, yeah, I told this story last night. It was fucking great. He goes, man, friggin' Guthrie, like, you didn't bring a guitar strap, you know? And, like, I can't get anywhere because of Mardi Gras parades. Is there a way the runner can't get to any stores? Like, you have an extra guitar strap? And I said, yeah, man, no problem. But it's got a big Confederate flag on it, but you can have it. Let Guthrie wear that on stage.
Oh, my God.
Oh, that was great.
But funny as shit.
Anyway. Let's talk about you. I'm sure, you know, I know you've been on a bunch of podcasts and interviews and things, so I don't want to go into, like, every beginning thing, but you, when you first started playing, were you were inspired by, was it more country music, or, like, who was the first guitar players? What made you want to pick up the instrument originally? Because I don't know this stuff, actually.
Well, so to go back to I'm from the Gulf Coast on the Florida-Alabama state line, mm-hmm. about 2.5-3 hours east of here, and my mom and dad are not musicians, you know, they're not musically gifted or talented or whatever you want to call it, but my dad's youngest brother was a self-taught musician, and he played and had a bunch of different instruments around his place, and I hung out with him like an older brother. Like I said, I'm an only child, so gravitated towards hanging out with him. Super cool guy. and had, you know, had different groups of people that he played with, some bluegrass guys, some kind of blues and, you know, kind of mild rock and roll kind of stuff, and just that kind of thing. But I was always around a lot of live music. All of my family's friends were musicians of some sort down there. And there was always good music playing. I wasn't raised on any top 40 radio. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it was just more roots, American roots music. One of my dad's middle brother was more into jazz. So I heard guys like Jean-Luc Ponty and, a little bit of John Scofield when I was really young, but I didn't really understand it back then. And so, you know, I didn't get hip to that stuff until years and years later. But I, you know, blues, bluegrass, really good songwriters. Like they were huge, Van Morrison, Jackson Brown, Bob Dylan fans, Neil Young, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I was learning how to play the mandolin and acoustic guitar, like flat picking stuff. I was jamming on my uncle's electric guitar, like a 335 style guitar. I was playing along to records like Johnny Winter and the Allman Brothers and Lynyrd Skynyrd.
So roots, kind of Southern rock,
Southern rock blues, stuff like that. And then
God's music.
Then I really got into that stuff. But and then, you know, I wasn't raised on any country music. My family didn't listen to country music.
Yeah.
I mean, it was more John Prine and stuff like that than it was. You know, I didn't really listen to, they weren't listening to Merle Haggard or Buck Owens or anything like that. I really didn't get hip to that stuff until I got to Nashville.
Oh, wow.
You know, and so I joined this band down on the Gulf Coast. We joined up with this guy that writes a lot of original music. He was from New York, so he kind of got me turned on to like Cuban music and different things like that. And then, I forgot to mention I was also listening to a lot of David Lindley and Ry Cooter and stuff like that as a kid, because my uncle had all those records. So kind of a diverse, you know, somewhat diverse album collection. But so, you know, then where was I going with that? Shit, what was I just talking about?
Well, I was just asking about what made you pick up the guitar. And then you're talking about a club you were playing with a guy who wrote originals.
Oh, so we had this original band down there. And so...
Was that at the Floribama?
That was at the Floribama. We played all the venues on the Gulf Coast in Pensacola and Mobile and all around the Gulf Coast. But I never learned any cover songs. That was the interesting thing. Like the only cover songs I learned were like bluegrass standards.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mainly played with a lot of original music. So I didn't learn, like most guitar players would probably learn some Beatles songs or some Led Zeppelin songs or something like that. I never did that. I don't know any of those songs at all, partly because I think my family, their friends were all musicians and songwriters, but of that kind of vein that I was talking about. And so we had this band, and I was trying to figure out my gear and my guitars and all the things we do when we're a teenager, changing pickups and trying to find all these different sounds I was looking for. And for some reason gravitated towards the Telecaster. I don't know why. 335 and Telecaster, because I think of playing so much acoustic guitar back then, they were the most stable, solid instruments, the least amount of moving parts of any guitar. So I gravitated towards the Telecaster. And then Danny Gatton I got turned on to, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. This guy's combining all these different styles that I love into one solo sometimes, you know. I thought, this is really cool. So I learned a bunch of stuff from him on some videos and stuff, and kind of saw his way of explaining in kind of his hillbilly way, which he said himself, of playing jazz, which is thinking of playing, you know, I don't know any theory. I didn't go to school or anything. But, you know, if you're playing in E dominant 7, you can play B minor ideas. You can play G major 7 ideas. Just simple little superimposing things like that. And that kind of helped get out of the pentatonic box and start learning some different harmony and stuff, which you can tell when I play. I don't know really anything about jazz or heavy fusion music, but I kind of have the flavor of it, you know, a little bit.
Yeah, the chromaticism,
But stuff like that. And then, you know, so playing all these gigs with that band on the Gulf Coast, when I got to Nashville and started playing with Don Kelly, I kind of had the country vocabulary a little bit together, but then really learned more of that stuff when I got to Nashville and got that gig with him and played for 4 years with him at Roberts on Broadway.
Now, Don Kelly, for those of you that don't know, and you could fill it in, but he was kind of like the... what's the word I'm looking for?
He's like the godfather of Broadway.
Of Broadway in Nashville. So like if you were in his band, he always had a reputation of having like badass hot young gun guitar players.
Yeah,
right?
That was another kind of instant street cred.
Street cred.
Yeah.
Sort of a calling card immediately.
Town. So guys like Brent Mason started with Don.
Oh, Johnny, Brent was with Don?
Johnny Highland, you know, JD and these guys. And so I did it for 4 years after Johnny Highland. And that's where I really learned. But Don, the thing about Don is he's from Tyler, Texas. He would be an R&B and blues guy, you know, if he had his way. But he just, you know, he realized that he could do his kind of amped up version of all these country standards and classics. And they were just fun as shit to play, you know.
About Red Volkart was
Red
he in there
Volkart
too?
Was in yeah, his band. Yeah, I totally forgot about Red. Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. That's pretty good company.
Really good company, man. And I was just, like I said, I didn't know what else to do. I moved to Nashville and I had heard about Don Kelly because they played their CD in the local music store in Pensacola. And I heard Johnny and he was doing these cool steel bends. And I said, man, who is that? And the guy goes, oh, we just got back from the NAMM show and we heard this guy down at Roberts. And so, you know, 5 years later when I moved to Nashville, I just thought, well, I don't know anything. I guess I'm going to go to this bar called Roberts. And I stood in the doorway and drank beer for the first month and met the band. And they all knew me because I was there, you know, 3-4 nights every weekend. And I just told Don, I said, hey, man, I just moved to town. If Johnny ever can't make the gig, I'd love to sub for you sometime. And he goes, oh, man, we don't even let anybody sit in, you know. And Don's kind of a gruff dude and real to the point, you know. And so finally, we ran into this mutual songwriter friend of mine, a friend of ours on the sidewalk. And he goes, man, you ought to get this kid to sit in with you sometime. And then that was like my way to get in.
Oh, okay.
So I went down and sat in with him on a real icy, snowy Sunday night. And Don loves the blues. I didn't even bring a Telecaster to that gig. I brought like a Guild hollow body. and even though I knew that was like a Telecaster heavy gig, but Don loved that because he's a blues guy at heart, you know? And so he just liked that I did something a little different, I think. And anyway, that turned into, that was like my launching pad into Nashville, you know?
All right. Yeah. I didn't know that. I mean, I knew you had worked with him, but,
yeah, pretty fun, man.
So you've been in Nashville 20 years?
Coming up on 20 years.
Wow,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I just turned 41 in February. So, you know, it's interesting, like the stuff we were talking about last night about your health and just having to kind of tone it down a little bit from when you're in your 20s and 30s.
Yeah.
That's kind of hitting me right now, 41 years old, and like I can't eat and drink what I want to be able to anymore for a little while or maybe forever.
Another few weeks.
And so, you know, it's funny when you get to that age and
that I've age, been, dude, I've been, like 40 years old.
I've been teaching a lot, and it's cool. It's cool, though, to realize for the first time, like, okay, I think I actually have enough experience to be able to share some things with other people that might not be total bullshit.
Is that what you're doing? I mean, we can get into this later, but you're doing a lot of teaching now, right? Like you have a pretty big online school or a lot of lessons you do.
Yeah, it just came from being presented with the opportunity to do it. I didn't search out or seek out to be a teacher at all. But people years ago started asking about learning some chicken picking stuff.
Yeah.
And these Belmont students were like, hey, man, you know, can you just show us how to go from the one to the four chord, even though they're in jazz guitar school? And it was the theory was confusing to them, you know. And so, so I took on a couple students. And then as that developed and I started, for some reason, I don't know why, but I got into doing the social media thing and then years ago and then started my YouTube channel a year and a half ago and just started taking off. And I got this company in California called Artist Works, presented me with this opportunity to do a school with them. And so we did the whole full curriculum and everything. And I wasn't touring a whole lot at that point with... I consider myself lucky to never have to tour with a real commercial country band or record on those records even or anything. I just kind of always, you know, it was just a little different path, you know. I ended up in a little different place. But so they saw that I was active on social media and they wanted somebody that could teach and that was a decent guitar player, but they also wanted somebody that they knew was going to promote it, you know, because it is a business. And so started doing that, got better as a teacher, I think, and I learned as much as anybody else doing it, and I enjoy doing it. Before the COVID thing happened, as we all know, I had a really good situation because I was playing enough live gigs doing the stuff with Oates and Sean Camp and some different people that I work with in town. Some of my own stuff. Charles Wig Walker, this great old soul singer up there.
I used to work with him.
Yeah. And one of my really good friends, like, so there's, I had a, just, you know, from that amount of time in Nashville, had a really great network of friends, different live gigs, a lot of musical diversity. I was happy doing, staying in town, had the lesson thing going. Like you, you know, have, you know, got some rental property that helps. And so I didn't have to play any gigs or any music that I didn't want to.
Yeah.
And so, and mainly hang around people that I didn't want to be around.
But let's just say,
let's
that's
just
really
get real.
What it's all about. Yeah. I don't want to get on a bus with a bunch of pissed off, complaining musicians, or
a bunch
get
of,
on a session where everybody's.
Yeah. Bitter people. But so I was in a good place, you know, and the teaching was enough. You know, there was five or six good things going on to where I wasn't getting burned out on one thing. Mm-hmm. And so then when COVID hit, I was like, oh, well, what's going to happen now? You know, when I got back from Africa, I thought, oh shit, the first phone call I'm going to get are my tenants saying that they can't afford to live here. And then everything's going to fall apart. I was, you know, catastrophic thinking. And I was like, oh God, man, this is going to be awful. Well, none of that happened. You know, we worry about these things, and 90% of the things we worry about never happen. So I was really lucky there. The Artist Works thing and the teaching stuff got even better because everybody's home.
Right. What a great, that's what I was going to say. What perfect timing for you right now.
And so my house and everything in East Nashville was okay after the tornado. And so I went from being super paranoid about everything to actually having some survivor's guilt.
Yeah.
Because all my friends are, even this thing is the first, I think we mentioned this last night, but this COVID thing is the first time that in the music industry, everybody's being affected no matter what level you're on. It doesn't matter if you're Britney Spears or if you're a guy in a van touring out of Nashville.
True. Everybody's affected.
Everybody's
and
affected.
And worldwide. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
When you think about it.
Right? So I'm super fortunate to be able to, up to today, right now, what is it, noon? Up till today, well, everything's okay.
12:08.
And so I'm just grateful that everything's okay till right now. And, you know, we could all get a phone call in the next,
well, that's a
you
good
know,
way to think, man. You know, I read this thing once that we should think of day tight compartments.
Yeah.
Just worry about today.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I totally agree.
It's never
agree.
Worked for me, but I try to think about it. It's like, well, okay, but I have I gotta get my wisdom teeth pulled at 4:30, so that's still in today.
Yeah.
So I have to worry
and
about
if,
that.
And if that doesn't work, there's five bars within walking distance from your house.
From here, hell yeah, there are. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh man. But anyway, that's not to ramble on and on and
no,
on, but,
no.
But I'm definitely fortunate. And that kind of thing just, you know, that happened. But a lot of young kids will message me and go, hey, I'm an aspiring session guitar player, or I want to move to Nashville and be a guitar player. What should I do? And sometimes if I'm in a good mood, I'll say, hey, man,
if you're in a good
give
mood.
Me a call. Let's talk yeah. about it. I'll sit on the phone yeah. and talk to you for 30 minutes about it and give you my spiel.
Right.
But usually I tell them like, hey man, this is what I did. You know, I knew that I didn't want to play. I think it's more important to sometimes know what you don't want to do than even knowing what you do want to do. Cause then you can eliminate all that shit.
It's great advice.
And kind of go with what you want to do. Don't learn a bunch of music that you don't like. Learn what you like And if you're going to gravitate and be good at the things that you enjoy doing, you know, I'm not cut out to be a five-star A-list Nashville session musician. I show up with a couple guitars. I sound the same on every one of them, and that's just kind of what it is. And I learned years ago that not to fight it, you know, like don't go out and buy every pedal that your favorite guitar player has, because he's already doing that better than anybody's going to be able to do ever. Mm. And so you got to kind of find out what you like, dig in, get good at it, and you're going to be happy, because that's going to send you down the right path to mm-hmm. where you need to end up. And I also tell them, like, look, you know, I didn't have any kind of, I quit school 2 weeks into the 10th grade, never went back, never learned any music on paper. And so, I had a long-term kind of like dream or vision or whatever kind of way out in there in the future, but I never had any hard, fast goals. Like, okay, I'm going to move to Nashville, and if things aren't working in 3 years, I'm going to move to LA. And then if things aren't working there in 2 years, I'm moving to New York, or I'm going to move into Paris or wherever. You just kind of got to stick around a little while, I think, and find out. And if it's really not working after a chunk of time, maybe reevaluate your situation. But, you know, I just kind of, like I said, kind of didn't have a hard, fast plan, but kind of saw out in the future kind of where I wanted to end up, or some guys' careers that I thought would be kind of cool to emulate, or, oh, this guy's doing five or six different things, that's really cool, you know. And then I just kind of, like I said, I moved to a town where a lot of my heroes lived when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And then you know, went where the good people and the good music and the work was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that seemed to work, you know.
Yeah, it seems like it.
I mean,
sure.
There's a lot of shit that I wish I'd be doing. I mean, I wish that, you know, we all look back, and, you know, the hard thing about it is knowing that knowing deep down that you have a lot of potential and a lot of natural ability, or whatever we want to call that, a gift, or you worked harder when you were younger, or whatever it was, your family was into a lot of good music, or wherever we come from. But then realizing that, you know, you're not really living up to the potential you really have.
Yeah.
And that's something that's one of the only things that, you know, I just wish I wasn't so fucking lazy.
there's your nugget of advice. Well, I don't think it's held you back.
But we're all hard on ourselves, because we are our own worst critics, because we do care about the music. We know that there's a lot more to learn. And if we sat around and just patted ourselves on the back all day long, telling ourselves how great we think we are, we'd suck.
I think you said a lot, like, especially these days where there's not a lot going on musically in clubs and stuff, it's harder, but I think it's necessary to be around, kind of get your ass kicked musically a lot, especially when you're younger, man. If you can get in a spot where Nashville, LA, mm-hmm. New York... I mean, I was doing that the last 4 years, you know, hanging with all these badasses, and I would come back home and my playing was better. Like, I could tell. It just elevates you to something. You're never going to get that watching YouTube.
No. You know? No, and just playing with other people.
Playing
you know?
With other people, getting on a session, like getting in the room with the big dudes, you know, when you're young. And, you know, all of us, that's like a stepping stone thing.
And,
you know?
And having some of those guys yell at you, you know, and kind of scare you to death.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So you're from not far from here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And did you grow up playing a lot of live music in clubs? Yeah.
Yep. Mardi Gras parades, clubs, festivals.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. I was making money with a guitar since I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
And it's you could do that. You can still do it. Not now, but I'm sure it'll come back. But in South Louisiana, dude, there's festivals for there's a festival for festival season. There's festivals for strawberries.
Right.
Catfish.
Yeah.
Crawfish. I mean, you jazz festival. There's all kinds of stuff. So Nate, people will come out and hear live music, even if it's shitty live music. They'll come out. And so, yeah, when I was a kid, absolutely, man. I was playing a lot. And that was, I'm so glad I got to do that. You know?
Kind of the same for me. You know, that was it. It was, you know, I wish, part of me, I've been spending more time in New Orleans lately than I ever have because of this friend of mine that I connected with. And then, you know, having kind of a little bit of a network down here through Doug. And I just met Kevin the other night, and then I've known you for a while. And, you know, it's just, and I'm from, this is kind of my latitude, you know? I guess that's the word. Is it latitude or longitude? I don't know. It's closer to the equator.
Starboard.
But, you know, I'm from not too far from here, and it feels good to be down here. It's a totally different thing. Nashville's squeaky clean. And not to say it's less real, because there's some great, great shit going on there that you will only know if you're there for a while.
Yeah.
What Nashville's known for on TV and the radio, to me, is the, you know, and trust me, I get it more than anybody. It's a business and people are making money, but it's the worst shit there as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
But great musicians playing on those records.
Mm-hmm.
But the writing and the art form, to me, is not anything that I'm interested in. But if you go there and you get out and you meet people like Andy Reese and you see the Time Jumpers with Vince Gill and those guys, or you go see some stuff at Rudy's Jazz Club, there's even some great Cuban salsa music there with guys that are actually from Cuba and Puerto Rico and Venezuela. And there's some great music in Nashville, but you got to be there and kind of know who to find, you know, who to talk to. It's like, I can't come to New Orleans and go to Bourbon Street. I got to hook up with you guys and have you take me to, you know, Frenchman Street or the Maple Leaf or wherever to hear the real shit. But you know, kind of the same boat as you. Grew up playing in clubs, playing with my uncle, and then playing with some bluegrass bands and songwriters and stuff. And I think that's really where it's at. I'm proud to say that every dime I've ever made since I was 12 years old, kind of like you, was from playing the guitar. You know, and we're lifers, man. Like, you know, there's not the mentality now, and especially with 5 or 6 months of COVID, it really eliminates, like, we, you know, if you're not full of shit before, you're really not going to be full, you know, there's no room for bullshit now after this COVID thing. It's just made us all kind of like, you know, you realize what's really important. You realize who your real friends are. You realize who, you know, the shit you want to eliminate out of your life. It really brings everything right into focus. And man, we're in this for to me the right reasons. We want to play music. It's not about the money. We need to make a living. But if you're getting paid a lot of money to play a gig that you're not happy with night after night, man, your days are numbered. Eventually, you're going to get out of that situation, no matter how much money it pays.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've never played with anybody like Bob Dylan or Tom Petty or any Bruce Springsteen, you know. Now, a gig like that might keep you around a little longer, but that's also great music too. So
yeah,
I don't know what I'm trying to say, but you get, you know,
I understand. It's you kinda, can't just do it for money. Yeah.
Yeah. We're, I call them lifers, man. We're lifers.
Yeah. Yeah, bro. Oh. Why don't we talk about, I don't know, let's see, what else? Okay, here's something. You can use this to give like a little mini lesson if you want. What's the most often asked request for, you know, when somebody hits you up on Skype or social media or whatever and say, man, I want to take a lesson, like, and you sit down, if you're going to give somebody a 10-minute lesson on what's the usual question you get? Is it chicken picking or is it like more technique or chord stuff or...
It's funny. To answer your question, the number one thing that it seems people want to do is find out how to get out of the pentatonic box. How do I get out of the pentatonic trap? Or, hey man, I know all my chord shapes, I know all my scales. How do I make it sound like music?
Right.
That's the biggest number one question. And the number one answer for me, and I shouldn't even say this, but to me that's the part that you can't really teach somebody. You know, you right. can, but that's the part that there is no magic pill for. It's like, because there is like an interpersonal, almost spiritual aspect to music that I put it in that category. And then the other category is the actual physical ability of putting both of your hands on the instrument and getting a good sound out of your right hand and your left hand and rhythm and timing and your tone and all those things. Those are just tools to be able to get to the other part, which is forgetting about all that shit, putting that on autopilot, subconscious, and then actually trying to make something that sounds like a melody or something that has a groove or hopefully both. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is hard. I know what you mean. And to
it's like hard
you
to said, make explain
music.
That.
Well, that's a subjective thing. I mean, right. Music to some people is
well, exactly.
music, but is it musical to other people? But
yeah.
But the pentatonic box, when I was teaching, that would get asked that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, because you get... And then I would start saying, well, why? Why do you want to get out of piss?
Yeah. That's guitar. Everything's
that's rock guitar.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of what people... That's a lot
right.
of what you do.
Oh, and so the other thing, not to interrupt, but the other thing they always ask is how to play over chord changes. That might be the number one. How to get out of the pentatonic box and
well,
how to play
so
over chord changes.
So if I was a student, just tell me real quick, what do you tell people?
The first thing I say is this is what changed my life. Because when I was learning a bunch of bluegrass flat picking tunes when I was a kid, I was stuck trying to solo over G, C, and D chord on the first four or five frets of the guitar. Open chords, right? And so some people call them cowboy chords or whatever, but just your open chords on the first three frets. And then I knew that I was trying to solo up the neck and I was getting completely lost, just completely lost. And so I watched this video of a guy and he said to be able to open up the fingerboard, you got to learn your chord shapes and learn the scales and arpeggios and stuff, the information around those chords.
So like the caged forms.
What people call the caged right. system now, which I hate that something's called a system, but it actually really works to me yeah. because I know where my kind of home bases are. It helps my hand position. Mm-hmm. And then it also helps you define the chord tones. Mm-hmm. And so I say learn your chord inversions. The chord's the foundation. The arpeggio's the first level of framework. The pentatonic's the second level of framework. And then the scale is the third level of framework.
Yeah.
And so if you learn, and then also people, I had somebody the other day say, oh, yeah, I know the A pentatonic scale. That means I can use that over everything, right? I went, well, no, not really. And so then I'll say, look, like, okay, there's four different sounds that you need to kind of get to where you can start discerning, right? Say you're in the key of C, you need to look at C major,
right.
C major 7, C dominant 7, and C minor. Mm-hmm. And then you really need to be able to know the difference between targeting those chord tones to play over those changes. So I would say if I'm playing something like this... Right, which is E major, A flat dominant 7, the 3, C sharp minor 7, the 6, E7 to A to B or B7, and then back to the 1, E. So if I was going to say how to outline those chords, well, you could play this. You know, you could play very simply melodically over that chord change and still technically be playing over the chords. Like if I just played this... So I'm just playing that, you know, two or three or four notes around the C-shaped E chord pentatonic, mm-hmm. but I'm still targeting, you know, that becomes the flat seven of your three chord, and then so forth. Or I would say, to take it to the next, chapter, I would say outline your 1-3
triad,
maybe your 1-3 triad, and so yeah. that would be first this. And then I'd say maybe add the next note to it, like the octave. So I go. So as soon as I hit the flat seven, you know immediately that's a dominant seven chord.
The strong chord tone.
Yeah, so it would sound like. No extra charge for mistakes, but Shane, of course, knows all this in spades. But that, to me, that's kind of like for me, it's kind of visualizing those chord shapes, and that kind of helps me get it under my fingers. Mm-hmm. And just seeing like, okay, and none of that was perfect by any means, but you get the idea, you know. Going, and then people will go, well, how come that three chord's not a minor? It has to be a minor. And I go, well, it's not, because it's leading you to the.
Yeah.
To the six minor.
Yeah.
So it's all about the. So it's the major third, the flat seven, the one, how those lead. Because if you play over a five chord, this is my hillbilly way of thinking about it. If you play over the five chord, the dominant seven or the flat seven of the five chord is leading to, it's pulling your ear to the major third of the one chord. It's a half step away.
Tension and release.
The tension and release. Mm-hmm. So that pulls your ear to those other chords. So in order to play over chord changes, to me, you have to be targeting the chord tones.
That's great advice. Yeah. So,
how do you look at that, Shane?
No, I look at it the same way, actually. Chord tones, same thing.
Really?
I mean, then you get a little more. Like I use that approach for years and years and years and still do, depending on the chord progression I'm trying to navigate. But then I watched an interview with Pat Metheny, and Pat was basically said, yeah, at this point, it's just 12 notes to me. I just think 12 notes.
Yeah.
So it's like a wider swath of harmonic stuff to navigate, but it's kind of the same thing, because your ear will pull you. But yeah, it's good to, like what Guthrie's talking about is great advice. And it's like more stepping stone, knowing where you can land and you can craft melodies around those safe notes, you know?
Yeah.
I love the way like that progression actually reminds me like something Willie Nelson would do, you know? And Willie is actually can be quite raggedy on guitar, but
he plays some brilliant
beautiful
shit.
Yeah. At the same time.
I agree, man.
And his thing is really from that school of thought, chord tones. You know, he'll go like if Willie was gonna, you know, he'll do that kind of thing.
Right. Right. That's
chord
it.
Chord tones. He'll land on the
That's it, yeah. That's it.
And,
yeah.
And it pulls your ear, like Guthrie was saying. You're going, oh, that's, oh, and it resolves. Mm-hmm. And there's a moment of tension and release.
Right.
And tension and release, you know.
Yeah.
It's jazz, you know, man.
Yeah. Willie, people may or may not know this, but one of, like, his favorite guitar players, Django.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and you don't want it to start sounding like an arpeggio exercise. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, a lot of times I'll go up a full arpeggio and then down the scale. And so not really on purpose, but my ear just, you know, nothing outlines the chord quicker to me than one of those arpeggios.
Yeah.
Like I said, you don't want it to start sounding like you're arpeggiating every chord because it's going to start sounding like an exercise. But in a split second, if somebody played this, anywhere in the world, you know that's an A-flat dominant 7 right. arpeggio. It can't really be anything else. I mean, it probably can, but, you know, so I'll go, like, over that chord. And then right there.
Yeah.
You know, going,
yeah, right.
So, and then you're.
Nice bends you're doing too are really nice. Yeah.
But yeah. And since I haven't taken the time to really learn what I'm doing on this guitar, that's as far as I've taken it is using those chord shapes. But you know, I hear these guys like Schofield and Shane your solo records are some of my favorite stuff. I mean, playing and tone wise and groove and everything, but I mean the you know, playing outside, as people call it, playing outside and knowing where you're at and being able to, that's where it gets into, like, if, I hate the term next level, but that's really the next level, and that's where I want to start exploring how to get out of what, you know, I've been doing for the past 20 years and get to the next chapter where I can start looking at it more like the 12 right. notes and not just bound by the chord shapes, because it is a whole different thing. And I know you know that, you know.
It is a different thing. I'm not, definitely not a, you know, I'm not saying I can do it.
Ask you a question. So if you are to the point like where I'm at where, okay, you know, I can navigate around a few things, but I'm not a jazz player by any stretch of the word, and people think I am because they hear the flavor of it, and they don't really realize that I don't know the harmony and the chord structure and that kind of thing. I can quote unquote fake it, right? Which I hate to even say that. But you do know it. And if you were me, what are the things that you start incorporating or start learning to be able to get into that next kind of chapter?
I don't know if I'm a jazz player either. I can play jazz things, but you know, I don't, I've played with a lot of jazz players that only do jazz. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know exactly what you'd be.
Is it getting just more and more, you know, your chord vocabulary?
Well, I think
expanding that.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, bro. I mean, I think it's probably like phrasing and mm-hmm. You know, that whole thing. I mean, there's a whole new language. It seems to me, I could be wrong, but like in New York,
mm-hmm.
you know, like the newer guys that's not new anymore was Kurt Rosenwinkel. And
right.
he created this thing and it spawned all these new guys. So in New York, there's like, you know, they're playing.
What was he doing differently?
I think it was phrasing, and it was like his, he would do a lot of things like triplets. And I never learned any of his stuff, but he's a brilliant player. But
yeah.
I think some of the, well, to sort of extrapolate on what you were saying earlier about, yeah, that's a good word, extrapolate.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a hell of a one.
Get out your Wikipedia, folks.
no, you were talking about learning like cage thing, just to get mm-hmm. back to that. One thing I did see with him that was very helpful to me, but I had already been kind of doing it. Like I used to have students that say, oh yeah, I know all my major scales. Yeah,
right.
I know. I know the caged. Yeah,
right.
What else you got? And mm-hmm. I'll go, okay, so let me see you stay in third position on guitar,
mm-hmm.
your index finger on the third fret, your pinky on the sixth fret.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see you play all 12 keys, major
right.
scales.
Right.
All 12 keys.
Yeah.
I put the metronome on, you know, 80 BPM or something.
Right.
Let me see it. And they're, oh, well, they have to fumble around.
Totally.
And
yeah.
move around. No, so mm-hmm. you don't really know
it. You don't
it.
Really know it. Right.
Because guitar
right.
can be a bitch to learn. It's very difficult to sight read on because
mm-hmm.
we have so many positions. Possibilities
and so many things repeating. Yeah,
yeah, like you can play this C,
right?
And that is all the same middle ledger line C
right.
on a staff music manuscript paper on a piano. There's one way to play
right.
that note.
Right.
88 keys. There's one
That's
of those.
One of them. Yeah, yeah.
We have like five.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So that opens up a whole can of worms, and then it also applies to major scales, like you're saying. So I mean. This is to kind of answer your question about jazz harmony. I think playing over chord changes after a while on guitar, you want to get out of patterns on guitar. Like,
mm-hmm.
and the way to do that, I used to practice scales like this. So it can't, obviously you can't see this on if you're listening, but I would take this G major scale and I would practice
right
horizontally.
Exactly.
But then not just that, I'd put a metronome on and I would just do random shit. Like I would go, I'd write down like six keys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's say G, B flat, D, just A flat.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I can remember. G. So I would start my G. Now, what did I say? B flat. Now I'm in B flat. D flat. Now I'm in D flat. I forget the other ones I'd said, but I'm moving up the neck,
mm-hmm.
switching right in midstream
yeah.
to a new position. I'm not playing the scale up and down. Oh, next one. No,
mm-hmm.
that's not how it works in real life. When
right.
you're navigating
right.
a chord change.
Yeah.
You might have a melodic idea that you're hearing and you want to play, which is the absolute goal of jazz
right.
improvisation. As far mm-hmm. as I can tell.
Totally. Yeah.
To be able to express your ideas spontaneously and not be inhibited by a chord change.
Mm-hmm.
So if that chord is gone something
right.
weird, I don't know,
yeah,
I would never do that, but you want to be able to shift your idea without having to think about stupid ass position changes,
right?
So
yeah.
I mean, that would be how you get to the next thing with phrasing. I've seen cats do it, and I do a little bit of it myself, but
That will definitely help your ear.
Absolutely.
Because having to go from hearing that that root of G and then switching midstream to B flat and switching to that.
I mean, let's see if I can do it.
I mean, that's some pretty...
Like, I'll just... I'm not going to take up all your time.
That's a hell of an exercise.
Yeah, it is a really good exercise. I practice it a lot. So let's say... I'm going to keep it simple just for this. Let's say A, F sharp, and D. Okay.
You want me to hold that up to the mic?
Sure. Yeah, so I can't do it. I'll embarrass myself. But like, okay, A, F sharp. So I'm going to start here. That's my A down fifth position, whatever. So, okay, A, F sharp, and D. So A. All right, let me hear it. So I'm going to keep it really simple. Eighth notes. Now, F sharp. D. See how I... A. F sharp. D. See? It's like a little game you can play.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So if you practice that enough, then you can play... that's a 30-year-old metronome. It still works.
I couldn't find the off switch.
I bought this when I was at GIT in like the early 90s at the store. It was the cheapest one they had because that's all I could afford. And the guy goes, well, you could buy this other one. It's a lot better. And I go, yeah, but it's $20. I'll take the $8 one. He goes,
that's awesome.
It might last you the rest of the year. But
it's lasted 30 years.
Works.
That's anyway, awesome. Now, that's a great exercise because, yeah, when you're, you know, and I'm one to talk because I'll be the first one to get lost, but... If you are thrown some chord changes that are out of your comfort zone, you're screwed.
Yeah.
You know.
Now in the real world of, you know, quote working stuff that you would actually get paid for, that you know commercial music or whatever, session or Nashville. You know people would go, how would you use that? But it's still useful. Like if you know, you're crafting a part or you're coming up with a hook or whatever, you got to know where you're gone.
Yeah.
You got to know your chord.
Well, and for me, especially if I'm playing like the mandolin or something, which I do frequently, you know, you get some guy and you're on a session all day long and every song that he's singing that he wrote is in E flat, A flat, B flat. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're like, I've been on sessions before where every song the guy wrote were all in flat keys.
Mm.
And yeah, you gotta know how to play in flat keys, you know? And it can get like, if people are practicing in their bedroom for 15 years and they only play in G, A, and E, then yeah, you get thrown another key and you're going to be, it's going to be challenging.
That's what they make
capos for. Yeah. The hillbilly crutch.
Audley, you know Audley Freed, right?
Yeah.
Audley told me this story. He was on my podcast too. He told me this story that he was on this one of these gigs, house band type things, and Keith Richards was a special guest. So they were backstage working out a tune, and Audley had a capo on, and Keith was, I don't know, man. It sounds like Keith might have been like kind of
needling
him,
up
a little bit, but it was hilarious. He's looking. He goes, How are you hearing? How are you playing the? And he all goes, well, Keith, I mean, I just have it on the third fret. I'm playing up here. Like, I'm just, you know, and this is going to be my D and it goes with you. And he goes, well, that's an A. And he's, yeah, but you're, you know, I'm capoed up. So I was like, I'm tuned down or something. Right. And then it went on and on. He was trying to explain it. And then Keith finally got it. And he goes, brilliant. Not even the bloody Germans could figure this out. Isn't that great?
That's awesome, man. Oh, God.
I did a few records with this blues singer named Bobby Rush, and he called it a cheater. He's like, hey, Shane, let me hold you, cheater. Cheater.
That's awesome, man. And then you got somebody like Albert Collins that never took it off, right?
Oh, I know, man.
It's like, it had that, I guess, I wonder if it had anything to do with the fact that, like, you know how B is like just a really resonant key? I don't know why, but it seems like, you know, right in here, that chord just sounds good in that part of the guitar. I wonder if he felt that and just said, I'm moving everything to that. You know, like if you have an acoustic and you capo up on the fourth fret or something, it gets real, the string tension gets tighter and it just gets fun to play. I don't know.
So tell me about your school. Is it what's it called, and how can people find it? And...
Yeah, so I'll give you the whole end of the podcast spiel.
Yeah,
so if you want to check out any music or merch or the lessons or anything like that, you can of course go to GuthrieTrap.com, and I've got my private Skype and Zoom lessons on there. And I can do in-person lessons in Nashville, but since COVID, I've just kind of been going to the Skype and Zoom stuff. And then the really good one, the best bang for your buck, and the real like professionally recorded and shot with pro audio and video, is this company called ArtistWorks, and that's artistworks.com. And there's like 35 teachers on there, and it's I have the country electric guitar school. But it's not limited to that. It's right. Basically just, you know, all the concepts we've been talking about, how to kind of start playing over chord changes and stuff like that. And it's a really good company. They're like the pinnacle of online learning. You can do video exchanges where you've got access to my full curriculum that we recorded, but you also have the option of sending in a video of your progress or with any questions. And then I get that in my queue and I respond with a video. So it's video exchange learning. And it's a great school, man. The owners and all the people that work there are friends of mine. I've been out to Napa, California, and videoed with them a bunch of times. And they've got teachers like John Patitucci, Nathan East, Paul Gilbert, Brian Sutton, Keith Wyatt does the blues course. I mean, they've got classical, jazz, bluegrass, all kinds of different stuff. So a really great school. So there's that. Check that out, and you know, follow my Instagram and Facebook and all that stuff that we have to do.
I've got one of your records, Pick Peace.
Yeah, I did a couple records. I'd like to come down here to New Orleans and do another one, do a third one down here. But there's a couple records floating around out there.
I'm gonna play some things in the, you know.
Okay, cool.
Put a couple
things in there. And I got the latest one that I did, it was a couple years ago, but there's the first one's all instrumental, kind of stripped down. And then the second one I did has a bunch of guest singers on there. Vince Gill's on there, Jimmy Hall, the McCrary sisters, Becca Bramlett.
Wow.
There's a bunch of good singers on there. Yeah, and a bunch of different musicians on that one too. And a lot of different kinds of music. I played some acoustic guitar, electric guitar. Some of those songs on there I'm pretty proud of. And then the first one was my first record, so it kind of sounds like a first record.
Oh, man, sometimes first records are the best.
I'm always trying to figure my shit out. But thanks a million, Shane, for having me on here, man.
Absolutely, bro.
Really great. Great to see your studio. And man, Shane's one of my favorite guitar players, and proud to be able to call him a friend of mine.
Oh, likewise, man. Yeah.
Thanks, man.
So, all right. Thanks for tuning in. Later. All right, everybody. Thanks for checking that out. It could have went on and on, as is the case usually here on the Riff Raff. A lot of other jams happen after that, some of which may see the light of day at some point on my website. Hit me up, Instagram, Facebook. Check out ShaneTerrio.com. Thank you for listening. Next time.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.